Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, June 16th, 2021. Coming up this hour,
we're closing in on the highly anticipated meeting between Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin.
Tensions flare up again in the Middle East as Israel fires rockets into Gaza.
Investors await clues from the Fed on tapering and future interest rate hikes.
And another Wall Street executive warns the pandemic-driven boom may be running out of steam.
New York State hits the 70% vaccination rate and lifts COVID restrictions. Plus, New York City mayoral candidates campaign ahead of next week's primary. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Kevin Durant led the Nets to a Game 5 win over Milwaukee. The Islanders lost Game 2 at Tampa Bay. Wins for the Mets and Yankees.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Amy Morris.
I'm Nathan Hager. U.S. futures appear to be going nowhere ahead of today's Fed decision. It's coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are little changed to the downside. Dow futures down 43 points. NASDAQ futures up 16. The 10-year, little change. The yield, 1.49%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.16%. NYMEX crude up a tenth percent, up 10 cents at $72.23 a barrel. COMEX gold up a quarter percent, up $4.80 at $18.61.20 an ounce. The euro is at 1.2128 against the dollar, and the yen is at 109.95. Amy?
Nathan, we begin with the highly anticipated meeting between Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin. The presidents are expected to speak about 4 to 5 hours. The meeting gets underway 2 hours from now in Geneva. Bloomberg's Youssef Gamel Eldin is there and brings us the very latest.
This time around, the set of expectations is a lot more muted. On the Russian side, there is a keenness to work on cyberspace to prevent it from further deteriorating. On the U.S. side, it's about the ransomware attacks, about tensions with Ukraine, geopolitics more broadly, and the heavy hand in terms of dealing with domestic opposition. Outcomes, we are hearing from officials, the bar is low. There's not going to be a light switch moment, as the U.S. Secretary of State would describe it. So no strategic friendship, no nuclear breakthrough in terms of an arms control agreement. Maybe you get something around climate change and a restoration of diplomatic ties, and at least there can be a bit more business and investment flow as well.
Bloomberg's Youssef Gamel Eldin says the meeting will likely serve to set expectations for the tense relationship between the U.S. and Russia. The two last met in 2011 when Biden told Putin not to run for president again after more than a decade in office.
Meantime, in the Middle East, tensions are flaring once again. Israel hit Hamas with airstrikes overnight after incendiary balloons launched from the Palestinian territory set fires in Israel. The violence threatens a fragile truce that ended the most recent round of fighting last month. It poses an early test to new Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, who took power in Israel just 3 days ago.
Turning to the markets now, it is all about the Fed today. The central bank wraps up a 2-day meeting and delivers a policy decision at 2 p.m. Wall Street time. We'll be looking for clues about when officials will slow the pace of asset purchases. Bloomberg economic correspondent, Michael McKee has more.
Once again, the Fed isn't expected to change policy, but this time Wall Street is hoping they might signal when they think they will. For investors and economists, this meeting will be about the dot plot and any sign policymakers believe they might need to raise rates next year, and about any language in the statement or from Chairman Powell that hints at the timing of tapering its QE purchases. A wild card may be a change in administered rates, interest on reserves, and reverse repos to keep a flood of cash in money markets from pulling short-term rates towards zero. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right. Thank you, Michael. We invite you to join us for live coverage of the Fed decision and Jay Powell's news conference. You want to tune in for that as part of a special edition of Bloomberg Surveillance. It begins at 1:30 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio and Bloomberg Television.
Well, back on Capitol Hill today, we have new developments on the effort to reach a bipartisan infrastructure deal. Republicans are optimistic about their latest effort to reach an agreement. Let's get the latest live with Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. GOP senators working on a package said they're confident they can drum up more support for the effort within their party. That's even as the top Senate Democrat takes steps to start advancing President Biden's agenda without Republicans. Now, it remains unclear whether all 50 Democrats in the Senate would back this latest Republican offer. Meanwhile, some progressives from both chambers are growing impatient with talks and say they're concerned their priorities will get shortchanged. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right. Thank you, Renita. We are also seeing moves on the regulatory front this morning. President Biden has named Lina Khan chairwoman of the Federal Trade Commission. She's a prominent advocate for aggressive antitrust enforcement against big tech. Khan's appointment comes just hours after the Senate confirmed her for a seat on the FTC.
Well, speaking of big tech, shares of Oracle are down about 4% in early trading. The world's second largest software maker reported sales that fell short of lofty expectations. Ed Ludlow has more from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
Oracle said revenue rose 7.5% to $11.2 billion in the latest quarter. Investors have been intensely focused on the cloud, bidding up the stock on the hopes the company's leadership can boost its presence in that sector. But it remains behind market leaders Amazon, Microsoft, and Google. And in this latest report, sales growth at the cloud unit fell short of what investors wanted to see. In San Francisco, Ed Ludlow, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Ed. And back on Wall Street, another executive is warning the pandemic-driven boom may be running out of steam. Citigroup Chief Financial Officer Mark Mason is signaling that revenue from the bank's trading operations will likely fall around 30% from last year.
Investment banking revenues are likely to be down in the low to mid single digit range. We do see strong M&A performance, and we do feel good about the pipeline and the dialogue that we're having in investment banking.
Citigroup Chief Financial Officer Mark Mason says the current quarter is turning out very different than last year. His comments followed a similar warning from J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon.
And when it comes to private equity, Blackstone is on the verge of its biggest real estate investment yet in China. Bloomberg News has learned the firm is near an agreement to buy office developer Soho China. The company could be valued around $3 billion. Right now, S&P futures are down 1 point. Dow futures down 44. NASDAQ futures up 13. Little change to the 10-year. The yield is at 1.49% and the yield on the 2-year, 0.16%. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
5:07 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Amy. Governor Andrew Cuomo lifted New York pandemic mandates effective immediately, saying that 70% of the state's adult population has now been given at least one dose of a coronavirus vaccine. Cuomo says New York, the early center of the U.S. outbreak, now has the lowest positive test rate in the U.S.
On the facts, what New York has done is extraordinary. We went literally from worst to first.
Cuomo shut down the state more than 15 months ago as the coronavirus spread. Meanwhile, there was a rise in the proportion of new coronavirus infections attributed to the Delta variant. It is now labeled a variant of concern by the CDC and a warning to communities with low vaccination rates. Wyoming, Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, and Arkansas are well under the 50% of the eligible population vaccinated. U.S. cases are running between 10,000 and 15,000 per day. New York City mayoral candidates are into the last stretch of campaigning as only 6 days remain before the Democratic primary. Eric Adams still leads the field of mayoral candidates according to the latest Marist poll, but former sanitation commissioner Catherine Garcia is not far behind. Garcia spoke with David Weston on Bloomberg's Balance of Power.
So it actually is opening the economy and getting people back to work. You can't do that without safety. That is foundational. But it also is, a reinforcing circle. If people don't have jobs, if people don't have somewhere to go every morning, that means that they're going to be left with not enough money for food.
Garcia is also calling for free child care for people making under $70,000 a year. Later today, another mayoral candidate, Sean Donovan, will speak on Bloomberg at 8:45 a.m. Wall Street time. Disgraced movie mogul Harvey Weinstein could be sent to Los Angeles to face additional sexual assault and rape charges as soon as next month after a New York judge denied his request to delay extradition. Weinstein, who is already serving a 23-year sentence after being convicted by a New York jury last February, appeared remotely for a hearing on the California case from his upstate prison. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Amy.
Thank you, Michael. 5:09 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, Amy. It was 2 years ago that the Nets won the Kevin Durant sweepstakes. They signed him knowing they'd have to wait a year to get him in uniform due to his leg injury, and he was injured for much of the regular season. But last night in Brooklyn, Durant put on a playoff performance for the ages. The Nets trailed Milwaukee by 17. Durant brought them back. They were up one in the final minute.
Harden up top, being hounded by Holiday. 9 to shoot for Brooklyn. In the black, going left to right. Milking a one-point lead. Harden holds. Holiday all over him. Finds Durant. Working right. Pull up three. Good! OKC! Nets by 4.
The FAN on the call. The Nets beat the Bucks 114-108. Durant played the entire game. Scored 49 points. Had 17 rebounds. 10 assists. 3 steals. 2 blocks. The Nets were without Kyrie Irving, but James Harden did surprisingly return from his hamstring injury, played all but 2 minutes, shot just 1 for 10, but did have 8 assists. The Nets lead the series 3-2, game 6 tomorrow in Milwaukee. The Islanders lost to Tampa Bay 4-2, that Stanley Cup playoff series title won as it comes to the Coliseum tomorrow. No first-place team in baseball has a larger division lead than the Mets, now up 5 in the NL East. More solid pitching this time from Taijuan Walker, and with Pete Alonso driving in 3 runs, Mets beat the Cubs 3-2. They are 19-6 at home. They've got Jacob deGrom on the mound tonight. A Yankee comeback in Buffalo. They trail the Blue Jays 5-2. Rallied to win 6-5. Home runs for Gary Sanchez, rookie Chris Kittens, and Brett Gardner. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Amy?
Thank you, John. Cameo is adding Irvin Magic Johnson to its board. The company lets celebrities sell personalized messages to fans. They record those messages for a fee up to $1,500. Cameo is betting that adding Magic Johnson to their board, though, will give the business a higher profile. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg. Mostly sunny skies today. Checking your weather, we're going up to 80 degrees, back down to 55 tonight with clear skies. And then tomorrow, the sun continues with a high near 80 degrees. Right now at 62 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. Futures fluctuate. Investors are turning cautious ahead of today's policy decision from the Federal Reserve. Oil is extending a powerful rally as treasuries hold steady. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are down 2 points. Dow futures down 53. NASDAQ futures up 10. Little change to the 10-year. As I mentioned, the yield is 1.49% on the benchmark 10-year note. Yield on the 2-year is 0.16%. NYMEX crude up 0.1%, up 8 cents, $72.20 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.2%, up $4.30 at $18.60.70 an ounce. The euro is at 1.2126 against the dollar. The yen, 109.94. That Fed policy decision, 2 p.m. Wall Street time. Live coverage all afternoon long here on Bloomberg Radio. At 8:30 this morning, we get housing starts, building permits, and import and export prices. Lennar and Honest Company report earnings after the bell today. That is a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Nathan. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin are set to meet for the highly anticipated summit in the Swiss capital of Geneva. It is a moment of high-stakes diplomacy that comes as both leaders agree that U.S.-Russian relations are strained. Tensions have flared up again between Israel and Hamas. Israeli aircraft struck sites belonging to the Gaza Strip's ruling Hamas party today after arson balloons were launched from the Palestinian territory. The violence mars a fragile truce that ended fighting in May. In the NBA, the Nets beat the Bucks 114-108 in Game 5 of the East semifinals. Brooklyn now has a 3-2 lead. In the NHL Stanley Cup semifinals, the Islanders lost to the Lightning 4-2. The series is now even at a game apiece. In Major League Baseball, the Mets and Yankees won. The Red Sox, Nationals, A's, and Giants were also winners. The Orioles lost. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. It is 5:20 on Wall Street. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And as Michael mentioned, just hours from now, President Biden will be meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. We're joined now by Bloomberg's Youssef Kamel Eldin, joining us now live from Geneva, where that meeting is going to take place. Youssef, it's a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time. What are you looking for from this meeting?
So basically, we're just under 2 hours away from the beginning of these meetings, which are taking place at Ville-la-Grange, which is this beautiful house from the 18th century on Lake Geneva. Going into this, of course, you're looking at about seven decades of history between the U.S. and Russia in terms of big summits. A lot of them have been important, and most of them have also served as historic milestones when we think back at Reagan and Gorbachev in 1985. But this time around, much more modest list of potential targets. On the U.S. side, this is going to be about the ransomware attacks, about tensions with Ukraine, heavy hand in dealing with opposition in Russia, so along the lines of Alexei Navalny. And for the Russian side, this is an attempt to try and prevent further deterioration. An agreement on cyberspace could be in the pipeline as well. So outcomes, as far as we hear from our sources, is no strategic friendship, no nuclear arms breakthrough, maybe something on climate change, a restoration of diplomatic ties so consular services could get back up and running. It helps with business, it helps with investors, and maybe it's a step forward to a future direction for phase two.
Now, Youssef, President Biden is coming into this after the NATO summit and after the G7, where he was rallying allies. Is he sort of trying to set a tone here?
He is, and it's been quite a long journey for him in the lead-up to this. It's, in fact, been so busy that the private officials have been telling us privately that after this eight-day whirlwind tour and being 10 years older than Mr. Putin, that the preference was to have the presser at the end of this event this afternoon to have them separately. So it's not going to be a shared press conference to make sure that Mr. Putin is not going to be able to pounce and to make use of any potential gaps for the domestic Russian audience. But in terms of building that alliance, it's, again, trying to strengthen your negotiating position. And the Russians, on their part, have tried to do the same thing. And part of that is, of course, the verbal back and forth, you know, quite a strong verbiage that's been thrown around in the last couple of weeks between the two. It's been already a very tense relationship for many years.
If you don't mind, I'd like to get back into those logistics a little bit, how long this is going to go, and that reporters you mentioned are going to eventually be on hand, which is very different from the last time Vladimir Putin met with an American president.
Sorry, could you say that again? There was something in the line.
I am just looking for more information on logistics, how long the meeting's going to go, reporters being on hand, because as you recall, the last time Vladimir Putin met with an American president, reporters were not there.
Absolutely, yeah. So this has been a very carefully crafted process. I mean, when I landed at Geneva Airport, I took the overnight flight from Dubai and came in on a 777, and the airport was stacked with planes from the U.S. and with Russia. And if you haven't been to Geneva Airport, it's far from a super hub. So the infrastructure isn't necessarily designed for that kind of interest from foreign powers. And so until we found our slot, it took quite a bit of a while, and that gives you kind of a backstage feel on the tensions that are very, very real. The two are not going to be sharing a meal, so you would have thought on a beautiful day like today, sun is shining, they're not going to have breakfast, they're not going to have lunch, and they're not going to have dinner. So everything's going to be done completely separately, and then for the press conference as well, where the access is going to be controlled, and we're still waiting actually for some confirmations for some people in the team as well.
Okay, so you're still waiting to find out if some reporters are going to be able to even have access to this.
Exactly.
All right, Youssef Gamel and Dean of Bloomberg, live from Geneva, where this high-stakes meeting is about to take place. We appreciate your time this morning. It is being called a high-stakes meeting, but it sounds as though neither side, Russia nor the U.S., expecting much in the way of a breakthrough, perhaps a reset in diplomatic relations, even as critics are saying maybe this meeting shouldn't be happening at all. We are watching this for you. We're going to bring it to you as we can. Much more still to come on Bloomberg Daybreak. Let's check the markets, the S&P futures. Now down 2.75 points. Dow futures up down 59. Pardon me. Dow futures down 59. Nasdaq futures up 9.5. 10-year price unchanged. The yield at 1.49%. Much more still to come this morning on Bloomberg Daybreak. We'll check the markets, bring you the latest news. Stay with us. This is Bloomberg. Just ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, we'll talk with Brown University political science chair Wendy Schiller with more of what to expect from President Biden's meeting with Vladimir Putin. This is Bloomberg.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130.
To Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991.
To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Amy Morris.
I'm Nathan Hager. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. We are nearing a highly anticipated meeting between Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin. The face-off between the presidents of the United States and Russia is set for 90 minutes from now in Geneva. Bloomberg's Youssef Gamal Eldin is there and brings us the very latest.
This is really a countdown almost to a heavyweight fight. They've met in the past under very different circumstances in 2011 when Mr. Putin was the prime minister and Mr. Biden was vice president. But this time around, the U.S. side is worried about Mr. Biden being at the end of an 8-day whirlwind tour. He's going to be tired. He's 10 years older than Mr. Putin. And so they want to make sure that the Russian leader can't exploit any gaps for domestic or even global purposes.
Bloomberg's Youssef Gamal Eldin says the meeting between Presidents Biden and Putin is expected to last 4 to 5 hours.
Another major story we're following, today's big meeting for the Fed. Wall Street will be looking at the policy decision for clues on the future of asset purchases and interest rates. Bloomberg's Vidi Del Giudice has more.
Recent public comments signal readiness among Fed officials to ponder tapering as the pandemic fades. But Bloomberg Economics doesn't see Fed Chair Jerome Powell or other key policymakers raring to act, especially today. There's the risk of a backfire and some sad memories. As a Fed governor in 2013, Powell was among those pushing a rollback, only to see Wall Street throw a taper tantrum at the mere suggestion. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thank you, Vin. Thanks. Turning to Capitol Hill now. New developments on the efforts to reach a bipartisan infrastructure deal. Let's get the latest live with Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. GOP senators working on a deal are confident they can drum up more support for the effort within their party. That's even as the top Senate Democrat takes steps to advance President Biden's agenda without Republicans. Now, it remains unclear whether all 50 Democrats in the Senate would back this latest Republican offer. And some progressives from both chambers are growing impatient with talks, and they say they're concerned their priorities will get shortchanged. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Renita, thank you. Right now, S&P futures moving lower, down almost 4 points now. Dow futures down 66. NASDAQ futures trimming their gains. They are up almost 5. Little change to the 10-year. The yield 1.49%. Yield on the 2-year 0.16%. Straight ahead, we'll bring you your latest local headlines and a check of sports. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Nathan. It is 5:33 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Amy. Governor Andrew Cuomo lifted New York pandemic mandates effective immediately. Cuomo says that 70% of the state's adult population has now been given at least one dose of a coronavirus vaccine.
Congratulations to New Yorkers because they are the ones who did it. We're no longer just surviving. We're not in our homes afraid to go out. We're not in our homes disinfecting everything that we can see.
Cuomo shut down the state more than 15 months ago as the coronavirus spread. New York City mayoral candidates are into the last stretch of campaigning as only 6 days remain before the Democratic primary. Eric Adams still leads the field of mayoral candidates according to the latest Marist poll, but former Sanitation Commissioner Catherine Garcia is not far behind. Garcia was asked if she had a second pick in the city's new ranked choice primary.
Oh, you know, I would not be in this race if I had a strong second choice. I'm running because New York City is in a state of crisis, and we need someone who's ready to roll up their sleeves and just do the work. And that's what I've been doing for the last 14 years, is showing up for New York City and making sure that we are providing what people need, whether or not that was water or plowing snow or, you know, picking up the garbage.
Garcia spoke with David Westin on Bloomberg's Balance of Power. Later today, another mayoral candidate, Sean Donovan, will speak on Bloomberg at 8:45 a.m. Wall Street time. Meanwhile, public records show Manhattan District Attorney candidate Tally Farrington Weinstein donated $8.2 million to her own campaign in the last few weeks. Making Juneteenth a federal holiday is one step closer to fruition. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
So it would make June 19th national. It is already recognized by most states and Washington, D.C. The bill sponsor, Senator Ed Markey, says it will address a long-ignored gap in history, recognizing the wrong that was done, acknowledging the pain and suffering of generations of slaves and their descendants, and finally to celebrate their freedom. The support has been pretty bipartisan, so it looks more than likely to pass the House and be signed by the president. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right, thank you, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
All right, Amy, the Nets' big three was supposedly down to one with injuries to Kyrie Irving and James Harden. The Nets knew they were going to rely heavily on Kevin Durant. Harden surprisingly returned but made only one shot. It was Durant who brought the Nets back from a 17-point deficit for a 114-108 win over Milwaukee and a 3-2 series lead. Durant played all 48 minutes, scored 49 points, had 17 rebounds, 10 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, hit big shots down the stretch. His coach is Steve Nash.
Who's Kai? You know, James obviously is soldiering through, you know, his ailments. We're down bodies, we're wounded, and for him to have the toughness, the mentality, you know, that's what makes him one of the all-time greats. And so this is a performance that, you know, a signature performance, you know, for Kevin and it was beautiful to watch.
Durant did get help from Jeff Green, 27 points. He made 7 of 8 threes. Game 6 tomorrow in Milwaukee. The Knicks' Julius Randle named second team All-NBA. Kyrie Irving named the third team. In Tampa, Nikita Kucherov had 3 assists. The Lightning cooled off the Islanders 4-2. The series is tied at 1. Game 3 tomorrow at the Coliseum. Another win for the Mets. Beat the Cubs 3-2. Taijuan Walker, 12 strikeouts in 7 innings. He's 6-2 with an ERA just over 2. Seth Lugo worked out of a ninth-inning jam for his first save. The Cubs had the tying run thrown out at the plate in the ninth. In Buffalo, Yankees trailed the Blue Jays 5-2. Got a run in the sixth inning, 2 in the seventh, another in the eighth. They beat Toronto 6-5. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports Team.
All right, thank you, John. 5:37 on Wall Street. Time now for the Tri-State Business Report. For that, we're joined by Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Restaurant bookings via Yelp surged past pre-pandemic levels in almost every U.S. state in May, with the notable exception of New York. Diners seated in Texas and Florida more than doubled compared with May 2019. California was back to pre-COVID-19 levels, while New York was still down from 2 years earlier. Fewer than 3 out of 10 white-collar employees were working at the office on average in 10 major U.S. cities, including New York. That's according to Castle Systems. The nationwide security company monitors access card swipes in more than 2,500 office buildings in cities across the country. The iconic New Haven pizza restaurant Sally's of Pisa is expanding. It will open up a location on Summer Street in Stamford this summer. The new location will allow for more outdoor seating as well as takeout and delivery. At your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report, I'm Ed Corey.
Thank you, Ed. It is 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Jeff Bellinger, and on WIOD in Miami, I'm reporting Royal Caribbean will delay cruises from Fort Lauderdale after some ship crew members tested positive for COVID-19.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. Poultry prices soar to a record on the fast food chicken sandwich wars.
I'm Caroline Hepke, Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on the possibility of a rebellion by Tory MPs against the Prime Minister's extension of COVID restrictions in the Parliament.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on 1010 Winds in New York, we're talking about how some of the city's richest neighborhoods missed out on the housing boom.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting General Motors will boost spending on electric and autonomous vehicles to $35 billion through 2025.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're watching, Oracle shares down almost 5% in early trading after the bell. The company reported cloud that came in below expectations. More from Bloomberg's Doug Krisner.
Oracle's quarterly cloud revenue increased 8% to $7.4 billion, but that was a little short of what some had hoped to see. This metric includes sales from hosting customer data in the cloud, but a large portion is generated by maintenance fees for traditional software kept on clients' corporate servers. So far this year, Oracle shares have gained 26%, nearly double the increase for the S&P 500. In New York, I'm Doug Krisner, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thank you, Doug. And more promising news on the battle against the pandemic. According to a large study by the University of Oxford, an antibody cocktail from Regeneron Pharmaceuticals reduced the risk of death by 20% among hospitalized COVID-19 patients who don't have natural antibody responses of their own. The combined therapy is already authorized in the U.S. for treating COVID patients at risk of developing severe symptoms. This is Bloomberg. Checking your weather for your Wednesday. Mostly sunny today. We're going up to 80 degrees, down to 55 tonight with clear skies. And then tomorrow, the sun comes back, a high near 80, 62 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. Futures are wavering as investors turn cautious ahead of today's policy decision from the Fed. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are down 2 points, Dow futures down 51, NASDAQ futures up 10. 10-year Treasury, little change. The yield, 1.49%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.16%. NYMEX crude up 0.3%, now up 20 cents at $72.32 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.25%, up $4.60 at $18.61 even an ounce. The euro is at 1.2123 against the dollar, British pound 1.4108, and the yen is at 109.96. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. President Biden meets President Putin in an effort to seek stability between the U.S. and Russia. After the summit today, Putin will hold his first news conference, and then Biden will hold his press briefing afterward. A federal judge lifted the Biden administration's temporary ban on new oil and gas leases on public lands and offshore waters. Oil industry advocates cheered the ruling after warning that any long-term halt in leasing jeopardizes jobs. Environmental groups said the ruling fails to account for the damage done by climate pollution. In the NBA, the Nets beat the Bucks in Game 5 of the East semifinals. Brooklyn now has a 3-2 lead. In the NHL Stanley Cup semifinals, the Islanders lost to the Lightning. That series even at a game apiece. Major League Baseball, the Mets and Yankees won. The Red Sox, Nationals, A's, and Giants also winners. The Orioles lost. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. 5:48 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And just hours from now, as we've been telling you, President Biden will be meeting with Russia President Vladimir Putin, their first meeting since Joe Biden was elected president. We're joined now by Wendy Schiller, chair of political science at Brown University. Professor Schiller, always a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time with us. you know, President Biden coming into this meeting after having called Putin a killer and after issuing a warning, remember, regarding the well-being of opposition leader Alexei Navalny. So what sort of tone is the president setting here?
Amy, this is a challenge for Joe Biden, right? Obviously, his reputation in the United States is one of sort of Uncle Joe. You know, he's an affable guy. Trump couldn't demonize him. You know, toughness is not exactly, you know, his MO, per se. So how does he go into this meeting? He's got, you know, many, many years of foreign policy experience. But what's, you know, what he's really got to figure out is how do you sort of discourage Putin from making further incursions into the Ukraine? For example, and cyber. You know, the cyber threat from Putin and the Russians is quite real. We know that, and he's exporting it. So now, how do you say to him, stop doing that? You know, what are we going to do to Russia that we aren't already doing? We have a lot of sanctions in place. You know, if you're Putin, you know, you might want to try to get some of these sanctions lifted. I mean, that one of the things is, what's the incentive for Putin to change his behavior? How does Biden give him an incentive to change his behavior? You can't lecture him on democracy. You know, we just had a president who tried to undo our presidential election. You know, and those emails that have come out this week about the Trump administration's effort there do not help President Biden when he's sitting across the table from Putin.
I can't imagine a scenario where President Biden would come away from this meeting having given something, though, to Vladimir Putin, because, as you say, he has to hold him accountable. But what more can be done?
Exactly. And so, you know, basically, he has to create some sort of conditions wherein, you know, the incentives for Putin change. You know, why does Putin want to disrupt America? Well, there are lots of really good reasons, right? And we don't know how long Putin lasts himself. You know, he changed the rules so he could be president again, even though he's supposed to step down in a couple of years. You know, what does that mean? You know, what does Biden specifically ask for that Putin could even conceivably, A, want to give him, and B, would give him? And that's, you know, that's what Biden has to do. He has to sort of make it clear that the United States is in a position to either demand or ask things of Russia, but also create the incentive for Russia to give the United States those things. And right now, just it's very hard to imagine any of those scenarios.
So it seems like maybe when President Biden scheduled this for right after the NATO summit and right after the G7, that seemed kind of smart then, because then the president has this opportunity to rally his allies, rally U.S. allies, before he goes into this meeting with Vladimir Putin.
Well, I think the main goal of this trip was to restore sort of a healthy working relationship between the United States and its allies abroad. That's what the main goal was, and it seems like he's made some, you know, good steps in that direction. And given that the United States is coming out of COVID and people are much more concerned with quote unquote going back to normal and the economy, it's also a good time to have what you might call a failed summit with Putin. In other words, even if he gets nothing, even if it doesn't turn out to be very good and they're all scowly and they don't get along, most people in America right now are not concerned with this particular element of foreign policy. So if it doesn't work or doesn't go well, it doesn't necessarily hurt President Biden the way that it could 6 months from now, and people might be paying closer attention.
We have about a minute here, but I'm interested. You talked about the political impact when President Biden does return back home. Depending on what happens with this meeting, what could then wind up happening at the White House and on Capitol Hill?
Well, I mean, I think that he will face criticism from the Republicans, President Biden will, Amy, because, you know, they're going to want him to be tougher and tougher, even though he's going to remind them that their guy, Trump, was not tough on Russia. And the Republicans themselves had to fight to keep sanctions against Russia, against the Trump administration. So there's going to be some squabbling there about being tough, and the Republicans are going to try to rewrite that playbook and certainly make vulnerability of the United States an issue going into 2022. So Biden's got to take as many steps as possible, particularly in emphasizing the restored relationships in terms of NATO countries and other allies to sort of combat that criticism of weakening the United States internationally.
Okay, briefly, the president had been pushing back against those critics who did say maybe this meeting shouldn't be happening at all. So why should it be happening?
I think, you know, you have to meet with the guy. You know, he is a weakened world superpower, but certainly still a world superpower. And we don't know how the relationship between Russia and China will continue to develop, or will it stay fairly competitive. You have to be willing to meet with him repeatedly just to show that the United States is interested in asserting itself across the range of countries that it views as considerable threats. So I don't think he had a choice. But as I said, if even if he doesn't walk away with anything, now would be the time to have that happen for him rather than, let's say, 6 months or a year from now.
Professor Wendy Schiller, always a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time with us. Wendy Schiller is chair of political science at Brown University. Nathan.
All right.
Amy, thank you. It is 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. Today, we're looking at the Supreme Court, considering whether to review a federal appeals decision that upheld Harvard University's policy of using race as a factor in admissions. The justices are asking for the Biden administration's view on the case, signaling their interest could roll back affirmative action programs at universities across the country. For more on the issue, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks to an expert in affirmative action, Susan Sturm, professor at Columbia Law School.
So the plaintiffs here are outright asking the Supreme Court to overturn the landmark 2003 Grutter case and decades of precedent.
Yes, they are. And part of the reason that there's serious concern about the decision to accept cert is that this is a case that relatively soon after that endorsement of Grutter. And the facts are fairly strong in this case in Harvard's behalf and have been so found both by the trial court and by the First Circuit. So there is a concern that with the change in the composition of the court, that if the court were to accept cert, that that might signal a willingness to either cut back dramatically the circumstances under which colleges and universities can explicitly consider race, or to eliminate that consideration completely. And this would be a deeply problematic decision on the part of the court.
Why I'm curious about the court asking the Biden administration for its input is that it seems pretty clear that the Biden administration is going to disagree with the position the Trump administration took supporting this lawsuit, because the Biden administration has already dropped the Yale lawsuit that the Trump administration brought.
It's a good question. And it's difficult to know whether the request is to really get updated views on the part of the government that will then inform a reconsideration internally to the court. That could be one signal. Another signal is just the interest of thoroughness. And I think Chief Justice Robert is one who is interested in conveying an idea of legitimacy on the part of the court, even as it might be an activist court that's really cutting back on the court's role in affording racial justice. So this could be a process. You see, we've offered every opportunity at every step of the way, and this is a circumstance under which we still find it appropriate to change, to step back on what's called stare decisis, which is upholding settled precedent. Or it could be an effort to really seriously think about whether this is a time and a place to open up these questions about the propriety under the Constitution, as the court reads it, of taking race into account.
That is Columbia Law Professor Susan Sturm speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. You can catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. Checking futures, not going much of anywhere ahead of the Fed decision at 2 p.m. Wall Street time. S&P futures are down 2 points right now. Dow futures down 50. NASDAQ futures up 11. The 10-year Treasury is up 1/32nd now, with the yield at 1.48%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.16%. Straight ahead, your latest business headlines, all the news you need to start your day. This is Bloomberg.